Okay, this morning for the Arabidopsis Research Roundup, I'm joined by Professor Murray Grant from the University of Exeter. We're going to talk about a new paper in Plant Cell, which is the large-scale biology paper with the title Transcriptional Dynamics Driving MAMP-Triggered Immunity and Pathogen Effector-Mediated Immunosuppression in Arabidopsis Leaves Following Infection with Pseudomonas syringae PV Tomato DC3000. There you go. I got through the title. So, Murray, thanks for joining us, first of all. Can you give us a brief synopsis of the paper?
Not really. No, I don't think so, because it took so much work. And so This is the culmination of about 5 years' work on a BBSRC-funded PRESTA project.
Okay.
It's the biggest paper I've been involved with. So we had 25 authors and 28 pages. So it's a huge amount of data in there. And what it is, I think the best part about the paper is it's a massive resource for the communities interested in plant-microbe interactions. So the paper involved actually looking at the transcriptional dynamics of the infection process, so really the transition from health to sickness of a plant leaf, which has been infected with Pseudomonas syringae. So it's a bacterial pathogen. And the beauty about the system that we used is that we have bacterial pathogens which we've mutated, and so they don't cause disease. So in the plant pathology field, we have what we call basal resistance, which is recognition of non-self, and the pathogen which are adapted to the host and they cause disease. And so by using a mutant, we could capture what we commonly know as basal resistance, and by using the virulent pathogen, we can capture disease progression. So the whole experiment involved 13 time points. We had 3 treatments because we had a control treatment, 156 samples, so a huge amount of data to be analysed. That's why we had about 11 theoreticians on the paper. Okay. Now, so the advantage of using this system is that, A, you get confluent infiltration of a leaf, therefore you initiate the infection process synchronously, whereas you don't have that advantage when you're using OMI sets of fungal pathogens, and actually having the heart mutant there. So what we can do is we know our pathogen delivers 28 proteins into the plant cell to cause disease, and does this through a molecular syringe. So our heart mutant that we use doesn't have that molecular syringe. So that gives us our basal defense response, and the virulent pathogen tells us. So the transcriptional activity, if we subtract what we see from the virulent pathogen, the heart mutant tells us the transcriptional activity of these 28 effectors. And so what we ended up with was finding that a third of the genome changed over the 13 time points. So this is when we needed to get the theoreticians in.
Yeah.
They developed a number of tools. We used at least 4 tools developed in the PRESTA program to analyze this data. And there's a huge amount of interesting findings which came out of that. And I suppose so what the paper captured was what happens when effectors start to change the basal defense profile. And I suppose for me, one of the interesting things was that using a program which looked at the time of first differential expression, all the genes that we looked at, either a basal defense response or a disease response, they all changed within the first 6 to 7 hours after infection. So what we know is that the bacteria don't grow until 8 hours. So this is telling us that there's a massive transcriptional reprogramming going on in the first 6 to 7 hours after infection. That doesn't mean that the gene expression dynamics don't change later in the infection process, but it means that those genes which are involved in the process have all been switched on in the first 6 to 7 hours. We also use programs to look at promoter motifs and co-regulated genes. We use some modelling programs. So there's a huge amount of data that we've generated. A lot of interesting things which we don't have the resources to work with, but we hope that other people in the community will be able to. And I think one nice example of how you can reuse these data is that people working with fungal pathogens who don't understand what component of their responses are basal defense responses can look at the data and say, well, these genes respond to the heart mutant, so these are probably part of a basal defense response. And we've been working with my co-author, Catherine Denby, to look at this with a botrytis data set. So some examples, I think, of the interesting things which came out of that was one of the first things we saw was this massive downregulation of genes involved in which are targeted to the chloroplast. So we call these nuclear-encoded chloroplast genes. So we just had a paper. So this work went on for about 5 years. We sort of cherry-picked some of the interesting things which occurred early. So we published in Nature Plants this example of this wholesale suppression of nuclear-encoded chloroplast genes. And that was totally counterintuitive. Why would you suddenly switch off all these genes? So it was an overrepresentation. There's 15% of the transcriptome of these. We're seeing more than 40% of those genes suppressed. And it happened in both challenges. So eventually we worked out that what happens in those instances is that the basal defense response initiates a reactive oxygen burst in the chloroplast, and the effect is actually suppress that burst. And you have to suppress that burst to allow the pathogen to grow. And it turned out that some of those effectors actually go into the chloroplast, and we're trying to understand the mechanism involved in that. I think another nice example of what came out of the work was, so we just published recently a new phytologist. Using the same data set, we looked at the jasminate response. Now, historically, jasminates are thought to suppress basal defense in the biotrophic pathogen. A lot of our data in the chloroplast work suggested that ABA was the key player early on. So we looked at expression of jasminate genes, which is what people use traditionally as markers of jasminate roles in defense responses. And we measured jasminates, and we saw jasminate genes induced in the first 7 to 8 hours, but we didn't see actual jasminic acid increasing in the infected leaf until 12 hours after those genes were switched on. So there's a major disconnect here. So we mined the data further and we looked at something called jazz genes, which are repressors of jasminate signaling. And we saw that those were induced at the same time as the JA biosynthetic genes. So based upon a hypothesis that those suppressors were trying to switch off JA signaling, so the plant was trying to do that, we went through a reverse genetic approach, and although we still haven't sorted out how you suppress JA signaling, what we found was that these jazzes cooperate, and two specific jazzes, JAS5 and JAS10, work to protect the plant from coronatine, which is a JA biosynthetic mimic made by Pseudomonas syringae. Okay. So there's a huge amount which has come out of that.
Yeah, so I think that paper was highlighted in a research roundup over the last few weeks, I think, or a couple of months at least. So it sounds like you've summed up the paper pretty well there, and it's difficult to do that in 5 minutes, obviously. But so thinking about moving forward, so what advice could you give to people who are interested in using your data set? Where should they look to see what might be interesting for them, maybe thinking about other people using that data set since it's a community resource? How can they access it, and where would you think would be the first point they might want to look within the data set?
So the data set's freely available. Okay. I think what people will be interested in, as I mentioned before, is trying to use it to help dissect their particular pathogen of interest and its effects on their host of interest. And so what you can do is you can look at the expression profiles under our base measurement, and you can use the changes in expression of those genes to really remove those expression patterns from your infection data sets. So you can make this assumption that those are involved in basal defense, and that will reduce your data set and give you many more or less targets that you can be looking at when you're trying to understand your particular pathogen's virulence strategy.
Okay.
I think there's interest. People are interested in sort of metabolic reconfiguration, which occurs. So first of all, the pathogen has to suppress basal defense. Then it has to actually somehow reconfigure metabolism. And at the moment, we don't understand in the field what the pathogen uses for its carbon and nitrogen sources. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of mileage in people who are looking at metabolic reconfiguration. I think there's probably a general interest that people have now in how the pathogen interferes with chloroplast physiology.
Okay.
It looks like that's going to be a common mechanism. Colleagues have been telling me they've seen changes in chloroplast with fungal and oomycete pathogens. So I think there's a lot of data there that can be used to infer from their systems what's going on.
Basically something to do with nutrient availability, so that the pathogen needs nutrients in some way, so it's altering the way the chloroplast works in the cell, I guess.
And so one thing we did report in the paper, and we haven't had time to even follow it up, is something which was really interesting, is that the virulent pathogen seems to suppress a lot of genes involved in chromatin remodeling. And again, this is all occurring before the bacteria multiply in the leaf. So that infers that chromatin remodeling is a really target of bacterial effectors. And at the same time that's happening, we see a lot of genes involved in ubiquitination increasing.
Okay.
And so we're assuming that those are really involved in removing negative regulators, so removing repressors from the system. So I think there's a whole open field there, and I think the data sets will provide a lot of interest for those people who are interested in chromatin remodeling, maybe some of the epigenetic studies.
Okay, cool. Okay, so I think we've got a good background of the paper there. We'll leave it there, but we'll encourage people to take a look at it and use the data set for things that are useful for them, certainly. All right, thanks very much, Murray, for describing that. Cheers.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, cheers. Thanks.
Not really, no, I don't think so, because it took so much work. And so this is the culmination of about 5 years' work on a BBSRC-funded Presta project.
Okay.
It's the biggest paper I've been involved with. So we had 25 authors and 28 pages. So it's a huge amount of data in there. And what it is, I think the best part about the paper is it's a massive resource for the communities interested in plant microbe interactions. So the paper involved actually looking at the transcriptional dynamics of the infection process, so really the transition from health to sickness of a plant leaf, which has been infected with Pseudomonas syringae. So it's a bacterial pathogen. And the beauty about the system that we used is that we have bacterial pathogens which we've mutated, and so they don't cause disease. So in the plant pathology field, we have what we call basal resistance, which is recognition of non-self, and the pathogen which are adapted to the host and they cause disease. And so by using a mutant, we could capture what we commonly know as basal resistance, and by using the virulent pathogen, we can capture disease progression. So the whole experiment involved 13 time points. We had 3 treatments because we had a control treatment, 156 samples, so a huge amount of data to be analysed. That's why we had about 11 theoreticians on the paper. Okay. Now, so the advantage of using this system is that, A, you get confluent infiltration of the leaf, therefore you initiate the infection process synchronously, whereas you don't have that advantage when you're using other mycetes of fungal pathogens, and actually having the heart mutant there. So what we can do is we know our pathogen delivers 28 proteins into the plant cell to cause disease, and does this through a molecular syringe. So our heart mutant that we use doesn't have that molecular syringe. So that gives us our basal defense response, and the virulent pathogen tells us. So the transcriptional activity, if we subtract what we see from the virulent pathogen, the heart mutant tells us the transcriptional activity of these 28 effectors. And so what we ended up with was finding that a third of the genome changed over the 13 time points. So this is when we needed to get the theoreticians in.
Yeah.
They developed a number of tools. We used at least 4 tools developed in the Presta program to analyze this data. And there's a huge amount of interesting findings which came out of that. And I suppose so what the paper captured was what happens when effectors start to change the basal defense profile. And I suppose for me, one of the interesting things was that using a program which looked at the time of first differential expression, all the genes that we looked at, either a basal defense response or a disease response, they all changed within the first 6 to 7 hours after infection. So what we know is that the bacteria don't grow until 8 hours. So this is telling us that there's a massive transcriptional reprogramming going on in the first 6 to 7 hours after infection. That doesn't mean that the gene expression dynamics don't change later in the infection process, but it means that those genes which are involved in the process have all been switched on in the first 6 to 7 hours. We also use programs to look at promoter motifs and co-regulated genes. We use some modelling programs. So there's a huge amount of data that we've generated. A lot of interesting things which we don't have the resources to work with, but we hope that other people in the community will be able to. And I think one nice example of how you can reuse these data is that people working with fungal pathogens who don't understand what component of their responses are basal defense responses can look at the data and say, well, these genes respond to the heart mutant, so these are probably part of a basal defense response. And we've been working with my co-author, Catherine Denby, to look at this with a botrytis data set. So some examples, I think, of the interesting things which came out of that was one of the first things we saw was this massive downregulation of genes involved in which are targeted to the chloroplast. So we call these nuclear-encoded chloroplast genes. So we just had a paper. So this work went on for about 5 years. We sort of cherry-picked some of the interesting things which occurred early. So we published in Nature Plants this example of this wholesale suppression of nuclear-encoded chloroplast genes. And that was totally counterintuitive. Why would you suddenly switch off all these genes? So it was an overrepresentation. There's 15% of the transcriptome of these. We're seeing more than 40% of those genes suppressed. And it happened in both challenges. So eventually we worked out that what happens in those instances is that the basal defense response initiates a reactive oxygen burst in the chloroplast, and the effect is actually suppress that burst, and you have to suppress that burst to allow the pathogen to grow. And it turned out that some of those effectors actually go into the chloroplast, and we're trying to understand the mechanism involved in that. I think another nice example of what came out of the work was, so we just published recently a new phytologist. Using the same data set, we looked at the jasminate response. Mm-hmm. Now, historically, jasminates are thought to suppress basal defense in the biotrophic pathogen. A lot of our data in the chloroplast work suggested that ABA was the key player early on. So we looked at expression of jasminate genes, which is what people use traditionally as markers of jasminate roles in defense responses. And we measured jasminates, and we saw jasminate genes induced in the first 7 to 8 hours, but we didn't see actual jasminic acid increasing in the affected leaf until 12 hours after those genes were switched on. So there's a major disconnect here. So we mined the data further, and we looked at something called jas genes, which are repressors of jasminate signaling. And we saw that those were induced at the same time as the JA biosynthetic genes. So based upon a hypothesis that those suppressors were trying to switch off JA signaling, so the plant was trying to do that, we went through a reverse genetic approach, and although we still haven't sorted out how you suppress JA signaling, what we found was that these jazzes cooperate, and two specific jazzes, JAS5 and JAS10, work to protect the plant from coronatine, which is a JA biosynthetic mimic made by Pseudomonas syringa. Okay. So there's a huge amount which has come out of that.
Yeah, so I think that paper was highlighted in a research roundup over the last few weeks, I think, or a couple of months at least. So it sounds like you've summed up the paper pretty well there, and it's difficult to do that in 5 minutes, obviously. But so thinking about moving forward, so what advice could you give to people who are interested in using your data set? Where should they look to see what might be interesting for them, maybe thinking about other people using that data set since it's a community resource? How can they access it, and where would you think would be the first point they might want to look within the data set?
So the data set's freely available. Okay. I think what people will be interested in, as I mentioned before, is trying to use it to help dissect their particular pathogen of interest and its effects on their host of interest. And so what you can do is you can look at the expression profiles under our base, and you can use the changes in expression of those genes to really remove those expression patterns from your infection data sets. So you make this assumption that those are involved in basal defense, and that will reduce your data set and give you many more or less targets that you'll be looking at when you're trying to understand your particular pathogen's virulence strategy.
Okay.
I think there's interest. People are interested in sort of metabolic reconfiguration, which occurs. So first of all, the pathogen has to suppress basal defense. Then it has to actually somehow reconfigure metabolism. And at the moment, we don't understand in the field what the pathogen uses for its carbon and nitrogen sources. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of mileage in people who are looking at metabolic reconfiguration. I think there's probably a general interest that people have now in how the pathogen interferes with chloroplast physiology.
Okay.
It looks like that's going to be a common mechanism. Colleagues have been telling me they've seen changes in chloroplast with fungal neoamycete pathogens. So I think there's a lot of data there that can be used to infer from their systems what's going on.
Basically something to do with nutrient availability, so that the pathogen needs nutrients in some way, so it's altering the way the chloroplast works in the cell, I guess.
Yeah. And so one thing we did report in the paper, and we haven't had time to even follow it up, is something which was really interesting, is that the virulent pathogen seems to suppress a lot of genes involved in chromatin remodeling. And again, this is all occurring before the bacteria multiply in the leaf. So that infers that chromatin remodeling is a target of bacterial effectors. And at the same time that's happening, we see a lot of genes involved in ubiquitination increasing.
Okay.
And so we're assuming that those are really involved in removing negative regulators, so removing repressors from the system. So I think there's a whole open field there, and I think the data sets will provide a lot of interest for those people who are interested in chromatin remodeling, maybe some of the epigenetic studies.
Okay, cool. Okay, so I think we've got a good background of the paper there. We'll leave it there, but we'll encourage people to take a look at it and use the data set for things that are useful for them, certainly. All right, thanks very much, Murray, for describing that. Cheers.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, cheers. Thanks.